Support for this podcast and the following message come from KUST Campus Radio. A student-operated, non-commercial radio station, KUST provides students and faculty of St. Thomas a platform dedicated to creative storytelling, diverse viewpoints, and exploring a vast array of audio content. Tune in at any time to KUST at mixler.com/KUST-radio.
Welcome to Keep the Ball Rolling, presented by Tommy Media. On today's show, we break down the end of the D3 soccer regular season. Then we talk Tommy football, getting back on track, and then we sit down with WCCO radio play-by-play guy Dave Lee and discuss the upcoming football game against St. Olaf.
Hey everyone, and welcome to KTBR, Keep the Ball Rolling, the only non-prescription Tommy Media podcast. I'm Noah Brown, sitting here with Brady Heldmeier and Althea Larson. How are you guys doing today?
I'm doing okay. I'm a little sick. I might need a prescription after this to get over this cold.
That's the thing. Just listen to this episode when it comes out. You won't need it. You'll feel better. Althea, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing pretty well. Do you need a prescription?
No, I'm feeling great.
Awesome. Well, listen to the podcast when it comes out and you'll feel even better.
Right?
So we've got a great show lined up for you here today. We're going to break down men's and women's soccer, a little bit of football. And then we've got Dave Lee, WCCO radio play-by-play guy for the Tommies, coming in. And then afterward, we'll just kind of summarize or preview the St. Olaf football game. But for all of that, soccer.
Yeah.
So the men's and the women's soccer team are rolling. We've got just a few games left before postseason play starts. The men have actually started to pick up some momentum here. In the beginning of the season, it was a little bit shaky, but I believe they're, 7-1 right now in the month of October on a 5-game win streak.
Yep.
At the time of this recording, they've got a game Tuesday night, which is tonight, so we don't know the outcome of that. But yeah, they are on a roll.
Yeah, they took care of St. Olaf on Saturday, a 4-0 win. They clinched their spot for the MIAC playoff, so they'll have to probably win that, I imagine, to get into the playoffs. The NCAA playoffs, yeah. That is. But so they got a spot at least, and they'll have a chance.
Right. And the NCAA playoffs are massive. I think it's 64 teams or something like that. And I believe there are only 68 teams in Division III.
Really? I didn't even know.
Or at least regionally ranked.
Huh.
So there's a fairly decent chance that the Tommies will make the playoffs.
Okay.
But I think seeding is incredibly important. They made a deep run in the playoffs last year. It was, the quarterfinals when they were eliminated?
Yeah, I believe so. The quarterfinals, was that eight teams? Yeah.
Yeah. No, that'd be, eight teams.
Yeah, I think they made it to the top.
Yeah, 8-4-2. Yeah, we can do math.
Barely.
We're journalism people. We don't do math. But anyway, they lost a lot of good players from graduation. You got the Oliver brothers, Shea Bottom, a few other guys who graduated. But I think it took them a while to figure out kind of the team chemistry, get back to that kind of level. But this is a team that's used to success, and I think we're starting to see that now. Particularly, I think Will Kidd has done a great job stepping in, taking in a leadership role. He scored 5 goals in his last 3 games, 2-1-2, I think it was. He's just on fire right now.
Yeah, I haven't watched the team play much. I've been mostly focused on football. But, yeah, I mean, I've seen they're picking up a little bit in this last couple of weeks. They got 2 games left on the regular season. And then it'll be – I think it's Augsburg and Bethel they have left.
Mm-hmm. Augsburg tonight and
Augsburg
then Bethel
tonight,
on Saturday.
Okay. And Augsburg's a pretty solid team. And I think they're top 3 in the MIAC. Let's see. Yeah, their MIAC record is 5-1-2. So St. Thomas will have a good chance come playoffs and – we'll see if they can put a run together like they did last year.
Yeah, and then on the other side, the women's team, they suffered their first loss in, what was it?
Since August.
Yeah.
They haven't lost since August.
That's such a bummer, but at the same time, if you're only losing 1 game over 2 months, you're probably in a pretty good spot. They're leading the MIAC right now. As I was saying before, I believe it was last week or 2 weeks ago, this is probably the best soccer team that St. Thomas has seen since the 2015 men's soccer team. And that was a team that just made – I believe that was a team that went to the national championship game, ultimately lost. But this women's team just all around is fantastic.
Yeah, and they kind of – they're all around Mallory DeBoom, right? I mean, she's got 14 goals or something really ridiculous. Maybe 13. But she scored a whole bunch of goals in a row. She didn't obviously score in the 1-0 loss to Olaf on Saturday, but I think the team will kind of go as she goes, and if she can stay hot, then they're going to stay hot.
And the St. Olaf game is concerning because this offense is what makes the Tommies move. They've scored a bunch of points in most of the games they've played. However, the defense still played really well, so you don't have to worry too much because they still haven't allowed more than one goal in a game since their first loss of the season in August.
Yeah,
the defense is playing incredibly well, and you can't expect a defense to play this well for this long, and the fact that they have is just a testament to how good the team is. So if they can fix these offensive woes, and maybe it was just a fluke, and sometimes you have those games. And I think that's what this is, because the amount of success they had over such a long period of time through the first 2 months of the season, having a loss, yeah, it sucks that the streak is broken, but this team can bounce back from it, and I think they can go far in the playoffs.
Yeah, sometimes it's good to lose a game, too. Having not lost a game since August for this team, you know, that might be just what they need, and that's probably what the coach, Sheila McGill, is kind of spinning it, is a couple games before the MIAC playoffs, then a couple games before the NCAA playoffs. It's kind of good to lose a game, maybe, you know, gets them focused again and say, like, okay, if we have one more game like that in the playoffs, it's over, you know? So maybe it'll be good for the team.
Right, and it identifies what the team needs to work on moving forward.
Yeah, we said the same thing with the Tommies losing to St. John's on the football side a couple weeks ago. Focuses up the team, hopefully. So we'll spin it in a positive direction.
Right. And speaking of football, they bounced back pretty nicely against Carleton.
Yes.
A typical St. Thomas football game, you know, 60-plus points shutout there. I think they're back on track.
Yeah, a smooth 68-0 win. And Josh Parks, just fastest guy on the field, running people over, mostly running around people because he could do that against Carleton. A couple of long runs. I think he had nearly 200 yards in the first half, 3 touchdowns. He looked unstoppable. Don't take it for much. I mean, it's Carleton, not a great football team. They'll play a little bit better team this week in Olaf. And we talked a little bit with Dave Lee about it. But they have, you know, a couple of their coaches, their head coach and their O coordinator and D coordinator, and then a couple position coaches are St. Thomas guys that are going to be very familiar with what St. Thomas is going to try to do on Saturday.
Right. Probably the biggest point of concern I have moving forward for the Tommies is still the passing game. I mean, Jock Para against Carleton only attempted 18 passes, completed 10 of them for 100 yards. So it looked sharp, fine. But if you look against Concordia and against St. John's, you just need to have a good passing game. And they really didn't. They didn't need, up until those points, they didn't need to have such a good passing game. They could rely on the running game. But when you look against St. John's, a team that could stuff the run like they did, I mean, well, not really.
Yeah.
256 yards from Josh Parks wasn't stuffing the run.
Yeah.
But when you need quick scores, you can't rely on the running game.
Yeah.
And the Tommies just haven't shown that they're not really dedicated enough to the passing game. They are a run first team.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
Everybody knows that. Josh Parks said it last week.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that if they can, the Tommies are going to run the ball. But we also need to know that this team can pass the ball and pass it effectively. And against St. John's, that just didn't happen with the 5 interceptions. It was an ugly game.
Yeah.
Passing.
Yeah.
And we really don't have a good test until the postseason, assuming that the Tommies get in, to see how well the passing game can respond to a good pass defense.
Yeah. Bethel will be – we'll see about Bethel. They typically have an okay team, so they should be. But you're right. We're not going to have a test in not even the first week of the playoffs. You could play somebody like Coe College from Iowa, a team that's not going to be great, from the UMAC maybe. So it's going to take until – week 2 or 3 of the playoffs, if we get in.
Over the past couple of years, it's been the quarterfinal round.
Yeah.
And we just haven't had time to fix it. I mean, you look at the past years, Oshkosh and Mount Union.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, Mary Hearn Baylor last year.
Baylor, yeah. So those are your concerns if you're a Tommy fan. But I don't know. We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah.
They have a really good football team, an exceptional defense that you can rely on, and they'll have to if they want to win a national championship. Score predictions for this weekend. What do you think?
Oh, goodness. I'm terrible at these. I've made a couple of bets with some of our Tommy Media staffers, one in particular, about score predictions, and I've lost them both. It was for the Concordia game, and it was for the St. John's game. So I owe him $10 now. So my score predictions are probably worth nothing.
Okay.
They're actually worth negative $10.
This is your chance to make some money off this. He's telling you right now.
Okay. What do I put the line at?
Oh, goodness.
Well, I don't think St. Olaf's probably going to score.
I don't think so either. But because of that, I'm going to say that this year's score will be 77-7.
I think I'm going to take the over on that. I'm going to go, last year it was 97-0. That's Caruso running up the score on his old coaches. I don't think he was very happy with those guys leaving, especially with them leaving and going to another school in the MIAC.
Right.
I'm going to go, I'll say 85. I don't even know if that's possible to score 85 points.
It is.
Does the math work out?
That's 12 touchdowns and then 1 2-point conversion in there.
Okay, we do a lot of 2-point conversions or take a knee.
Okay, so let's put
on extra points.
Let's put the over under at 80. Tommies score fewer than 80 points, I get $5.
Okay.
If they score over 80 points, you get 5.
Okay. Deal. We're shaking on it.
Shaking hands.
All righty. Well, we'll watch for that. Althea, what do you got? Let's give Althea's prediction here. What do you think the score is?
Yeah. Oh God. I don't know if they're going to go above 80.
Okay.
I would say probably between somewhere between 70 and 80.
Okay.
Is where I'm going to put.
All right. So you're on Noah's side. Yes. I think we're going to score more than 80 points. Josh Parks, if you're listening to this, run a couple extra touchdowns.
Can we split the $5 if we win? Do 50 each?
I will use the $5 to buy you coffee.
All right. Well, there you have it, folks. Is that our show? Anything else, Noah?
We got the interview.
Oh, yeah. We got the interview.
This is the first segment. Are you trying to leave early on us?
Good. Let's get to the interview.
Yeah. Dave Lee, WCCO's play-by-play guy. Here it is.
We now welcome on the voice of Tommy Football, WCCO's Dave Lee. Dave, thanks for coming in.
Brady, thank you.
So you've done this for a couple of years now, and you've seen a lot of Tommy football. You've seen them blow out a lot of teams. Most recently was Carlton this last weekend, 62-0.
Mm-hmm.
How do you keep your audience engaged in games like that?
That's a great question. I mean, that's where you learn if you're any good, right?
Right.
Anybody can do, I think, for the most part, if it's a tight game, close game, you know, and you're waiting for the end, you don't know what's going to happen. Those are the ones you dream of. Those are the ones that win awards and all those sort of things. When you get a game that's just kind of boring after a quarter, then that's up to you to see what you're made of. So in a way, you kind of look at it as a challenge, you know.
And so
that's when you have a number of for every game you have a lot of information. At least I do. I put a lot of things down or read a lot of things, so if I get into this situation, I can draw back on, you know, a little digression of some kind.
Has it been easier doing that for how long have you done
For Tommy's?
Yeah, for the Tommy's.
I think this is the 8th year.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I read that. 2010, I think the contract started, and it goes through 2019 with WCCO. But does it get easier? Like, you've done it for a while now. Does it get easier to knowing the players, knowing what Caruso kind of does?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, you can kind of, you know who's going to get the ball and who's going to be for the most part. Mm-hmm. You know, first couple of games, maybe some of the freshmen and new guys or guys that didn't play, because this is a tough team to make. I mean, let's face it, coming in here as a freshman and playing – for these guys is challenging. So you know most of them. The problem with doing games for the Tommies, and probably the Johnnies too, is you got 100-plus guys in the rosters. You got triple numbers.
Right.
You know?
So and Caruso changes people's jerseys all the time.
Coach does that sometimes in a game. Usually I'll try to see him on the field and say, gosh, I love working with the guy. I'm just a big admirer of his, but I'll always say any number changes.
Yeah.
Because as the announcer, you're the one that looks like, you know, you don't know what's going on when you don't know the number, but there's so many guys out there, and, yeah, they'll switch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to an interview with Joe Buck a while ago, and he was kind of explaining the difference between commentating for radio and commentating for video, where on radio you have to paint the picture for everybody who's listening in because they can't see it. And so you're sitting there describing what's happening, whereas on television you're more of a supplementary role where you're just telling people something they don't know because they can see everything that's happening. Is there one that you think that is easier? Would it be easier to call radio and be able to completely control what people are listening to, what people are hearing, or do you think it'd be easier to do video where you do have that visual support?
Well, I do both.
Okay.
And TV's easier.
Okay.
Simple answer. It's easier because I think the thing you have to remember about doing a game, it's not about you. As much as your ego can get in the way and you can kind of think about yourself, the game is really still the most important thing, whatever level you're at. TV, you don't have to talk as much. You should be able to let the pictures. In fact, a lot of times radio guys go to TV and they talk too much. We talk too much.
Mm-hmm.
So, just blessed with the chance to do both. And TV, frankly, is a lot easier.
Is there one you enjoy doing more?
It's all on the game. It doesn't matter to me. I like doing them both. I just like doing it. So it's fun.
Right.
as long as it's a good game, mm-hmm. that's all you really care. So if you're in TV, let's say you're going to win an Emmy, you need a good game to win an Emmy.
Right.
You have to have a, yeah. you know, I don't care how great you are, you need a good game to win an Emmy. In radio, the awards that they give out, you got to have a good game. So you dream of that, no matter if it's radio or TV.
What do you think? You've watched the team since 2010, and you've seen them progress to where they're at in 2018, where it's basically national championship or bust
yep.
at this point. What's been the biggest progression you've seen from 2010 until now, 2018?
Well, I think the depth. So let's take a look at their defense this year, which you guys do and look at all mm-hmm. the time.
Yep.
You can go to virtually how many guys on a team, 18 to 20, maybe more, defense, and they just slip in and out.
Yeah.
They are so balanced. They're so deep. I have a friend who's a coach here in town of a very good program, and he sent over a wide receiver a few years ago, and he told him he was looking at different schools, D2 schools, maybe walk on to D1, as the coach told me. He chose St. Thomas for a number of reasons, and he comes in as a freshman thinking he's going to start as a wide receiver. Senior year he starts. Hmm. And I remember running that coach who's quite accomplished, won a number of state titles, and he says, that's when I realized how deep the talent level is in the MIAC now. All the schools have it. I mean, they may not have the numbers of the Tommies or the Johnnies, but they have quality. Just a couple years ago with the quarterbacks, I mean, they had quarterbacks here that would have been easily D1 quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
So the level is, I think that's what I've noticed the most. And I'm sure it's always good, but it's really impressive.
Yeah.
And you get the transfers coming in and that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, you see a lot of quarterbacks in the MIAC transfers, like the Bethel quarterbacks to transfer from Minnesota, obviously St. Thomas with Para. St. John's Erdman, he played at what, Penn State?
Yeah, Penn State.
I mean, that's the three best teams in the MIAC, basically, and they're all transfer quarterbacks.
Yeah, they're good. And the kid down at Carleton, I mean, he's going to probably, he's in the record books now. I don't know if he'll be number one somewhere along the line in certain categories. I mean, and that kid is loaded with talent, too. He just doesn't probably have enough around him.
Exactly.
Yeah, so you said there's a bunch of talent here. So anytime an issue rises up, so when, you know, watching the St. John's game, you know, losing 40-20, there was a receiver, Will Gillock, who had 256 yards mm-hmm. against the Tommies. Just a monster day. So if the talent isn't the issue with the team, where do you think these issues then come from when a team like the Tommies, who is really deep all around, loses by such a margin? How do they move forward to fix that then?
Well, I think one of the things you have to look at in that game is that fumble by Josh Parks, who, by the way, is one of the best backs I've seen in a long time at any level, and I've done D1 football and all mm-hmm. that stuff, and Josh is just incredible. Another kid that went to Minnesota
yeah.
initially. But he gets down to the 1 yard line, right? And that fumble, that changed everything. Was his knee down? I don't know. They don't have video replay. Did the ball? I don't know any of those things. I just know that changed the dynamics. But to your point, you're right, that Erdman shredded mm-hmm. the defense like I've never seen before. And, you know, five guys out. Remember, they tried to run, couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And they just kept coming out with a spread all the time, you know. And then we saw last weekend Carleton with their trips on both sides. I've never seen that. Six guys out on a three on a side. That was that's part of the fun of doing a game
yeah.
because you never know what's going to happen. So if those two teams meet in the playoffs again, could be a different story, but boy, St. John's, I agree with you. They looked really good, and they had the Tommies figured out on defense. That fumble might have turned it, but St. John's kind of through that game had the best game I've seen them have ever since I've been doing
really?
It against the Tommies.
Yeah, we talked to Parks last week. He came in. He said he wasn't going to say if he was down, but it looked like the film said his knee was down, and they thought he was down. It is what it is.
That's the word, yeah, and I didn't have the luxury of seeing that, but I couldn't tell from our angle. But the great thing about doing Tommy games is we have video in there.
Oh, do you?
So you can see.
Do you have the Tommy Sports feed, I imagine, then?
Yeah, and a great film crew here at St. Thomas. Mm-hmm. I mean, these guys are working major league games, some of them, and so you got pretty talented film crew in there.
Yeah.
So kind of shifting gears here, did you always know, or when did you know that you wanted to do radio?
Well, that's a great question. I don't know. I was, I'm not a communication major. I'm not a speech major. What I did was I wanted to go get my degree, and then maybe advance into the next level. I don't think I was disciplined enough, to be quite honest. I know I didn't have the money to do it. But when I was a freshman in college, I went out to the local. I went to the college radio station, and I asked, hey, can I get a – it seemed like fun, right?
Yeah.
And when I was there, you had to get on the air, you had to have a license. You had to take a three-part test. And it was a pretty challenging test. And then you could be on the air. So I did that, got it. And I went and said, hey, can I get part-time work? And I needed money, and it would be fun, right? This is kind of a fun gig. Well, they said, yeah, maybe next year you could volunteer, and a year after that we'll give you, we could maybe give you a salary position if you're good enough. Fair enough. I understand it. No problem. You know who am I? I haven't even done anything. I'm nobody special. So then that afternoon, I went to a commercial radio station. I said, is there any way I can, clean the garbage, do production, splice tape? I'll do anything. I just thought this would be fun to learn, and I need a part-time job. So I grew up throwing hay bales, hoeing beets, a lot of heavy lifting, and I knew I didn't do that anymore. So I went in there, and they said, yeah, we'll put you on the air 9 hours Sunday. It's a country music station, which I hated at the time, and we'll see how good you are. If you're any good, we keep you. If we don't, you're done.
9 hours.
9 hours, 3 to midnight.
How do you fill that much time?
Well, I don't even know. I look back and just played a lot of records. I know that, and it was a DJ show, so I didn't have to do much, and I couldn't have done much. And I'm playing music I just can't stand. But you did it, and then they kept me, and then they did. It was a station where they did a lot of sports. So then I would do that at weekend shift, and I ended up doing 3 to 4 nights a week of play-by-play. Because they did, they had a guy doing hockey, they had a guy doing basketball, they had a guy doing women's basketball. So and I would do anything and everything I could. So you would go to little towns and set up, or we'd do it in a larger town, whatever. So I got into it. I stayed in it. I majored in something else, got my degree in something else, had opportunities to go in a different way, and I had I would have had Monday through Friday hours. I would have had insurance. I would have had a lot of better money. But there was something about this stupid business that just makes you say, God, this is fun. So the hours are awful. Mm-hmm. The money's horrible. But it's really fun. So that's why I stayed in it. And sometimes they'll tell you if you can do, I hate to say if you do your passion, it isn't like you're working, because you get to your passion because you work hard. It just doesn't, I don't think, happen. But it was something I really enjoyed, and I managed to get through all of those struggles. But you know what? Every one of them paid off. Every one of them paid off an experience. So that's probably a longer answer than you need it. So, no, I never intended to do this. Dumb luck.
You have a fantastic radio voice and just broadcasting voice in general. Is that something you always kind of had, or did you have to work at
that?
That's
whiskey and cigarettes. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, I think, you're born with what you're born with, I guess. So
yeah.
But when I started... I grew up in a little Norwegian town. I remember I went down to Arizona, and we were down there fooling around in college like you guys would do a spring trip.
Yeah.
And so we're down there, and I remember this one woman was chatting, and she said, stop. I said, I don't know what you mean. She said, just stop talking. And I said, I don't get it. She said, don't ever lose that accent. And I'm going, what's she talking about? She's from the South,
She mm-hmm. gets, yeah.
And she said I had a Norwegian accent. Mm. And that's when I went back up to school and went to work. I said, I got to get rid of the Norwegian accent. So that's the only issue I had with that. But so, yeah, you're just kind of born with the pipes, I guess. But the great thing about our business and radio and TV, I don't think you have to have a great voice. I think you have to have some personality. Mm-hmm. And that can carry you through. So voice is fine, but you can. I think anybody can do this.
Mm. It's good to know.
We were talking a little bit before the show just kind of about everything moving toward online, toward internet. Podcasts are popping up everywhere now. As starting off in the radio business, has that been a hard transition moving from just kind of the analog radio to a more online-friendly environment?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, it's a whole different beast. Guys that get a little, older like myself at the high end of the demo, you're going, I really want to learn this. But I do want to learn it because I want to know what you guys are doing. I want to know what my kids are doing. One of them is St. Thomas grad, by the way. So it has been an adaptation, and we have to, do the podcast. But now we have to do a lot of things digitally. We have to source out where we didn't before. So it really is, But in a way, what's kind of cool about that? Now you're learning something new again. So it's challenging you. You guys are growing up with it. For me, I got to, incorporate it now into my stubborn ways, but it's a kick, I got to say.
What's been the hardest part of the transition?
Well, I think, that's a good question. I think just taking the time to either work on a podcast, taking the time to social media. Let's say you're at an event and they want pictures, as you want or video. Mm-hmm. It's hard for me to get that in my noggin sometimes to think to film something, to take a picture of something. I just, so you're with somebody the other day, and I was with a couple of guys I know that, kind of famous, and I get back and say, hey, weren't you with so-and-so? Yeah, well, where's the picture? We need something for social media. I just didn't – I didn't think of that. So I
– That's kind of hard. Our generation is just wired to always have your phone out. And
yeah.
It's just, I don't like it personally at some points, and just your phone's got to be, like, basically connected to your hand.
Yeah, exactly. And I just don't think that way sometimes. Yeah. So.
Okay, so we're kind of jumping all over the place, but I was going to ask you this question about if you could relive any day as a professional, and since you've graduated college, I guess we could say, if you could relive any day that you've interviewed somebody great, you covered a great game, where would you go?
Wow, that's a good question. I wish I'd worked harder when I was your age. I thought I did. There's a lot more things I probably should have done. As far as interviews are concerned, sports, I had a chance to work on the 91 World Series. I did, when I first started, and I would fill in doing Twins broadcasts. So when the regular guys, Herb and John, couldn't do it, I did the play-by-play. So I got to do Fenway Park and Boston back in 91, which was, you know, my first Major League Baseball game. And if that wasn't fun, you know, that was just – I had a buddy paged on Fenway so he could hear his name on the Fenway speakers. attention, Brady. You know, that sort of thing. But that was really fun at Boston. And what we did out there, and you guys are baseball fans, I think, and so we had we get to the park, and I'm filling in, and I go down. I know most of the players. That's Puckett. That's Herbeck. That's Kevin Tappany, that 91 World Series team. At the time, we didn't know it, but we're in Boston late August, as I recall, and it was a four-game series. And we walk into the clubhouse, first of all, and I remember seeing Herbie, and I remember seeing Jack Morris and those guys, and the coaches who I knew, Gardy and Terry Crowley, I think at the time, I got to sit there, and Suchy and Twiggs and all these guys. Anyway, I said, hey, is it okay? And my producer was with from my regular show. He's out in Boston. I said, is it okay if Inkster and I run over and on the field and go out and touch the Green Monster? And they looked at us. You got to do that.
Yeah.
So the only one on the field is a guy named Wade Boggs, Hall of Famer. Yep. He's taking ground balls. This is nobody's in the stadium yet except us as media. So we run out in the field. We run out to left field, and you have to jump to touch the monster. So we both jump up, touch it. We're high-fiving each other. And as we came back to the dugout, all the coaches are standing up giving us a standing ovation. So I called my wife at home. I said, you know, to me this was heaven on earth, touching the Green Monster, being at Fenway doing a ball game. Before the game, I called my wife and said, I said, you're not going to believe this. I said, we went out and jumped up and touched the Green Monster. And she pauses and goes, what's that? What's that mean? You know, so we were all jacked up.
Yeah.
But so that was really cool because it was the first time. I'm nervous. I don't want to screw this up. You want to make sure you get every player right, every play right. And that was a pretty special moment. You know, whether I did a good job, probably not. But it was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. What draws you to St. Thomas then? If you have, you know, these opportunities to go other places, I imagine, what draws you to call St. Thomas games?
Well, I would say Mark Dienhardt had a lot to do with it. Mark, when he was at the University of Minnesota, I went over there and did games for them for 10 years. I think, 10 years I did games, basketball and football, and then the contract ran out, and whatever, the station decided not to keep doing it. So those are matters a pay grade above mine. And so Mark called, so you want to do St. Thomas? Said, I don't know if I'm doing any anymore. I've done it my whole life, from high school, you know, and Major League Baseball and some TV stuff, which I still do a little bit of that. And I just didn't know if I want, you know, I finally get a weekend off. But my son went here, and he had a great experience, and I knew Coach Dienhardt well because he's just honored, a couple weekends ago with those teams. And his name's still up on that track record board if you look up for the shot put. I think it's a shot put. Mark still holds the record from 1973, maybe, somewhere, or five or something like that. Yeah, it's so anyway, we talked about it, and then I said, what the heck? I just like sports, and it's been really fun. I got to say, really fun. But Coach Caruso makes it that way. I really enjoy him.
I've been to a couple of just different conferences with a whole bunch of journalists, kind of socializing and networking, and one of the most fun things I've done is gone around and listened to people's horror stories about some of the things that have gone absolutely wrong on a day of shooting, on a day of recording. What is your horror story? Do you have any bad experiences?
You know, just to take a twist on that, I think when you get a bad experience, the minute you panic, you got a problem. So now you got to hopefully learn and draw from it, and you really have to handle it properly. And I would say 90% of us, you know, might throw something, kick something, But I was blessed to work with one engineer and also one of our newsmen, because my, you know, my main job is being on the air in the mornings. So that's why it's nice. I can kind of do sports for leisure, which is really a nice option. But I remember how well they handled themselves in crisis. They never got mad. They just, and that's a rarity. So we've had plenty of those. They had one this morning, as a matter of fact. But the minute you get irate and start screaming, I'm not sure what you accomplish. You get tense, and you gotta, and hopefully you can draw from it and say, well, we did this or I learned this. But I remember going on, when I was 18, I was doing a high school, a girls basketball game, and I drove up to the town, the gym, about 2 hours away, and I'd hook up the equipment, which is different than it is now. And none of the phone lines worked. Apparently the phone company had come in, and they have to hook up a line, and then we have to do some wires and all of that fun stuff, which I knew back in the day, but it wasn't working. So I started taking wires off and trying connecting wires and got shocked like a son of a...
Oh, geez.
Son of a... Yeah, I mean, yeah. I took a shot. I went flying back. Phone guy finally came out. What are you doing? I said, I'm trying to get us on the air, which you didn't do.
Yeah.
So you have situations like that. But, you know, now I can laugh about it. I don't know if I was laughing then. Because what you have... The reason you panic probably and get worried is because you've got sponsors.
Right.
And I remember they sold these broadcasts for sports like crazy up there. And so if you didn't get on, then you're going to take the heat for station just lost a lot of money because you can't get on. So you kind of learned all those things along the way. So
there's no Bill O'Reilly, we're doing it live. There's another word in there, but we're doing it live. There's no moments like that.
I've certainly been around it.
Yeah.
And I've certainly said some stupid things, but not quite like that.
Yeah.
I had a friend who was doing a live commercial, and he was doing a food product, and he thought they were went to break.
Yeah.
And he was a regular. He was one of the anchors. And he took the product and kicked it in the air and said, who eats this blankety-blank anyway?
Oh, boy.
And cancellation right there. But he kept his job. He got suspended, but he kept his job.
Wow.
It's just not smart. When there's a mic nearby or a camera... Yeah, you got to, you know, be a little smart about it.
Yeah. Was there a certain point in your career when kind of the nerves went away and you knew, not necessarily like the excitement's still there, but you're comfortable with where you're at and you're not nervous per se for any sort of broadcast?
Yes. I don't know exactly when that happened, but it does happen. You don't really get nervous. There's a good thing about nervousness. I think it makes you a little sharper sometimes.
Yeah.
But I don't get nearly what I used to, and I'll give you an example of that. When I first started, we had on the air one day, we're talking to George Will, the longtime columnist in Washington, a vocabulary beyond my comprehension. Mm-hmm. So I'm just worried he's going to say words. I'm going to go, what does that mean? So you know, you got a thesaurus there. You're looking, okay, let's see if he says this word. And so now he's on the phone, right? This is on the radio. And all of a sudden, my headphones, the producer on this side is going, Reverend Jesse Jackson is online too. And I got George Will talking to me, answering one of my questions in this headphone. I'm going, Reverend Jesse Jackson, why is he calling?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you got to flip from George Will and then segue into Reverend Jackson. I don't remember the exact circumstances, but it was breaking news as it was happening. And my heart was thumping because I don't want to ask the wrong question to either one of these guys. You're intimidated by both of them because they're quite knowledgeable, quite smart, and I knew I wasn't. So I'm going, wow, I got to keep this thing, on the tracks. So that I was very nervous for that.
Okay.
Yeah. But nowadays, not too often. I can't really think of when I last was.
When you interview coaches, and especially Caruso, how do you get more than just a generic, you know, coach answers? Yeah. There's some secrets you can share with us.
Because we host, we do a weekly studio show in the TV studio down the hall. And one thing our advisors are always saying is like, okay, we're most likely, if you ask even just like the slightest bit wrong question, it's going to be like, oh yeah, we're just focused on the next game, moving forward. Yeah. How do you avoid those kinds of answers?
Yeah, like a halftime reporter.
Yeah, right.
You know,
yeah.
How's the team playing? That's really the art of being a good interviewer. You've got to kind of, you know, figure that out. You can't always do it. That's really the key. So you need to do your research if you know you're talking to that person, if you know what their hot button is. I'll give you an example of that. Because the generic questions drive you nuts. And we're all doing this for a living, so sometimes it's our own fault.
Mm-hmm.
But some coaches are tough. They're tough. I mean, I can name a couple right now that I don't care if I ever ask them another question again or not because I know exactly what the answer is.
Yeah.
But I'll give you an example of kind of a hot button. And this was, again, I didn't expect that. Nolan Ryan is a Hall of Fame pitcher. all-time strikeout leader, right?
Yep.
So he's like 2 years from retirement. And Nolan, I mean, I grew up playing baseball. I love baseball. Nolan Ryan, are you kidding me? This is like, wow. He's sitting in the studio with him, with me. Texas was up here for a three-game series. This was the second to the last year before he retired. And he came in for an hour. Advil was sponsoring him, so you do about 3 minutes of, you know, how great Advil is. And then we had 57 minutes of baseball talk.
Yep.
So I did my research, and I knew a lot about him in the first place. But so the first part of the interview, it's the answers are short, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yep. No, and I'm, you know, that's the worst. I got 50 minutes. I'm getting yes or no. Are you kidding me? How am I going to, you know? And I know Nolan, you know, the media sometimes didn't do him any favors, and so he's very careful. I completely understand that. So we're shooting the breeze, and a commercial comes on. And a lot of times people of that stature don't really ask you a question because they're not that concerned about you.
Right.
But you're always, you know, you want to know everything about them. So in the break, he says to me, let me ask you a couple of questions. I'm like, okay. And he says, where are you from? So I told him, I said, you take a line from your little hometown in Texas and you draw it straight north to the little town I grew up in. I said, we're both from the same size town, like whatever it was, 800 people or whatever. And I said, you go right into my hometown. He said, really? He said, did you, you know, and asked me a couple questions. Did you play ball? I said, play ball. Every morning we'd go out and play in the summertime, you know, till get up at 9 or play out there till the noon whistle went off.
Yeah.
Noon whistle went off. I said, then we'd go home and have something to eat, and then we'd meet at the swimming pool, and you'd swim for a couple hours. You'd come back out and play ball from 4 till 6. Then the 6 o'clock siren whistle would go off, and then you'd go home, have something to eat, and then you'd come back out, play a little kick the can or whatever, and then you'd play baseball. And where I grew up in the summer, it was still light till about 10 or so, right?
Yep.
So further north. And I said, then the 10 o'clock whistle or siren would go off, and then, you know, that was kind of when you headed home.
Time to go home.
And he looks at me and says, you had 3 sirens? I only had 1. And after that, the interview was awesome because we were like our best buddies.
Right. Yeah.
It was a great interview after that. Well, who would have known that something like that would have triggered it? So. And Bill Russell was another one. He was another Hall of Famer and one of my all-time. I just loved Bill Russell, man. I still do. So he came in the studio one day, and we just started BSing. And he sat there for an hour on the air. He came back a half hour later, walked in the studio, and I said, did you forget something? He said, no, I just had so much fun. Let's just sit down and talk some more. And that, you know, you just need something.
That's cool.
But I told Bill Russell, I said, when he was playing toward the end of his career, we'd play in the backyard of what we call Grandma Green's garage. The ball was so cold in the winter, the ball didn't bounce. But we, you know, 2 guys just sat out there, and you know, to Russell, to Havlicek, to DeBuscher. He shoots, you know, whatever.
Yep.
The players. DeBuscher was a Nick, but these guys are Celtics. But anyway, so I told him, I said, you don't know how many points you scored when you were about 4'9" tall. And I said, but I was always Bill Russell. I was the littlest guy on the court. And I said, you must have scored 100 points in the afternoon. And after that, you know, best friends. So that was, sometimes you luck into it. But other times when you look at their bios, there's so much information, speaking of social media now, that if there's a little tweak that they like, that's all it needs. That's because they know that you've taken the time to learn a little about them.
That's really cool.
And authors will tell you that, too. You actually read the book?
Yeah.
You know, they'll come through the author tours. You read the book? I mean, then you got it.
Yeah, then you're good. We got a couple minutes left here. I want to talk just a little more Tommy football before we let you go here. One thing Noah and I have been talking about the last couple of weeks, and it was mainly before the St. John's loss, but do you think the MIAC is kind of – or maybe the Tommies are outgrowing the MIAC and we're kind of separating from the rest of the competition? Do you feel that way?
Well, there's a lot of talk. I know a lot of people feel that way.
Yeah.
I hear it. Like it's my fault,
yeah.
but I understand it. I get it.
Yeah.
Before Glenn Caruso was here, I think everybody wanted to play the Tommies, didn't they?
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden he's changed it around. I think all the credit goes to him for doing what he's doing. And should they change it? I don't know. If they did, probably football only. The word is that I know some would like him upped in that conference with the Mankato States and the Concordia and the Southwest States. But or do you get 2 divisions, or what do you do? Yeah, I've heard the talk. I don't know if anything will happen, obviously. I don't have much say in it. But there's no question it's top-heavy in football. I think everybody knows that.
Yeah, there have been talks of, you know, bumping St. Thomas up to D2. Not, like, legitimate talks, but just people saying, you know, bump them up to D2.
Yeah.
Put them in the WIAC, combine MIAC and the UMAC for football or something. If you were able to change it, would you leave it as it is, or
What do you think is kind of the best solution moving forward?
Well, I think I would leave that answer up to Dan McCain, the MIAC commissioner. But I do think you probably have to look at something. You have to have you got to get together and figure it out.
Yeah.
But again, I mean, Glenn came in here and just completely turned it around. So in the midst of, I understand that if you're not winning, it's frustrating. But you have to at some point give him credit for what he's accomplished, which is really marvelous. I mean, when you look at the numbers over his coaching period, I think, what is he, second behind maybe Lou Saban for percentage of winning? And then behind him, I think now is Urban Meyer.
Yeah, Nick Saban's up there too. And yeah, he's right up there with all those guys.
That's impressive.
Yeah, it's like his winning percentage is incredible.
Like 85% or something like that?
It might even be higher. I'm not sure, but he so I give him credit first, but should there be a change, I wouldn't doubt there will be. I know a number of people are calling for it. You guys do too. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good problem to have if you're St. Thomas administration.
Everybody hates the winner.
That your team is winning by so much that people can't stand you. We're looking forward to next weekend.
Well, Eden Prairie is similar to that in high school football.
Right. Exactly. I'm from Minnetonka. I hate Eden Prairie. We haven't beat them in like so long. I don't even know, like 14 years or something
like
that. It's
crazy. And that's when Mike Grant moved in, remember?
Yeah.
But you got a great coach there in Nelly. He's a dude.
Oh, Coach Nelson. I love them. But we somehow can't beat Eden Prairie. Yeah. Maybe this is the year. We'll see.
Yeah. I went to Eastview, and the same thing with Eden Prairie, although Eastview just isn't a great football team. I think we have, maybe two wins in the last three or something like that. It went really downhill when I got there.
Yeah, it just kind of goes in cycles. And, of course, I remember when they were both in the same conference, not Minnetonka, but Eden Prairie and Eastview. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, my son played in that conference, so I remember that.
Well, we look forward to St. Olaf this weekend, and they have their three top coaching positions. They're all former St. Thomas guys.
Yeah.
Killian, their head coach, he was the O coordinator here. Mark Kubacki is their defensive coordinator. He coached tight ends here. Joseph Lepsche is their O coordinator, and he was, I don't know what position, he was a recruiting coach here.
And Ryan Coleman.
And Ryan Coleman as well. Yeah, I guess I see that. I didn't even know he's a St. Thomas guy.
Yeah,
huh?
He was at St. Thomas. He was a long snapper for the Gophers when I was doing their games.
Okay.
And then Ryan was over here coaching and went with those other guys over to St. Olaf. He's a great guy, very sharp, and so he's a good guy. And then I see Austin Yoakum.
Yeah, I'm looking
well
at that right now. Yeah.
How about that?
Austin, I didn't know that.
The Mike Stamm Award winners.
Yeah.
But well, it's opportunities for those guys.
That'll
be
interesting. Yeah, I think they've improved quite a bit from last year.
Oh, boy, yeah.
In year two of the Killian era over there. But that'll be fun to watch. I mean, Crusoe last year ran the score up a little bit on him, 97-0. so it'll be interesting to see if that happens again this weekend.
The James Killian, their head coach, when I was doing Gophers, he was a quarterback for Tulsa.
Yep.
And Tulsa had a great team, and he was a great quarterback, really good player. And that was the 2 years that he was a quarterback, and they were very good. But the Gophers that year had Barber and Maroney, and, man, I think it was maybe the second or third most best offense in the history of the Big Ten.
Was that the Sun Bowl? Sun Bowl?
That was a regular season game when they played Tulsa.
But that was that year that they went to the Sun Bowl.
Year, I think we beat Oregon. They beat Oregon.
Was that year or that not that year?
It may be, yeah. Okay. Yeah, it may be.
Yeah, that was a good.
Because the 1 year with Maroney Barber, they beat Alabama, who had two running backs. I can't think of who was on that team. But Mike Shula was the coach.
Okay.
And then, of course, Saban came in after that. But those two teams – 2002-2003, I got to sit and think about it. 2004, maybe, they were the most second and third best offenses in Big Ten history.
Wow.
Anyway, James was on that team of Tulsa, and that was a nice team.
Did Killian play in the pros for a little bit then?
He got drafted.
He did? Okay.
In the pros, and then he played in the Canadian League, and I think James played in the Arena League a little bit too. Yeah, great guy. Good, sharp guy. They got a good coach down there at St. Olaf.
Yeah, that'll be fun. Hopefully they can get a good powerhouse going down there. That'd be a good rivalry.
Yeah, that would be nice. Well, they had one a few years back, a nice team, and then things kind of fell apart a little bit. So I hope they can reestablish, because that would help everybody.
Yeah, definitely would.
So, Dave, we like to end every interview with a producer question. It's the same question we ask all of our interview guests, and we keep a running tally of their answers. So, Althea, we'll turn it over to you.
Yeah. So in the 2014 NFC Divisional game where the Packers faced the Cowboys, we ask everyone, did Dez catch it?
Where the Packers played the Cowboys?
So back in 2014, it was the NFC Divisional round.
I got the play for you here.
The catch where it was Dez Bryant comes down with it near the end zone. It was initially ruled a catch, but then it was overturned because, quote, didn't have possession, didn't make a football move, or whatever it was.
And what's my question? Did it count?
Did he catch it or
did
not?
Did Dez catch it?
Oh, did he catch it?
Yeah.
Yeah, he caught it. And you know where I was watching that? In my opinion, he caught it. You know, this is terrible. I was watching it on the back of a cruise ship in outside the Bahamas.
There you
watching
go.
That okay. game on a big screen.
There you go. That's a good place to watch it.
Yeah. So I didn't much care at that point whether
yeah,
he
right.
caught it.
Yeah.
But I think he caught it. Yeah, it bounced out there right at the end. And, yeah. But I do. I think he caught it. Well, and they changed that rule, basically, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Right.
So.
It's what, only one person so far said he
yeah, it's
did.
A 5-1
Am I the only
now.
One?
No.
One person said that he did not. Everyone yeah. else has said
must
that he did.
A, must have been a Packer fan.
Something yeah. like that. It was one of the defensive players for the Tommies.
One from Green Bay? Glenn's got
it
a
was,
lot of Green Bay
was
guys.
It Matt Mitchell?
Yeah, it was Matt Mitchell.
Matt Mitchell.
Oh, Matt's a Chicago
yeah,
you know guy.
Matt,
right?
Yeah, he's just and, yeah. crazy.
So we assume it's just because he was a defender and was, I don't know, something like that.
Yeah, he's a defense. Yeah, makes sense. So I had no dog in the race. I think he caught it.
Okay.
Dave, awesome. Thank you for coming in. We
thank
really
you
appreciate
so much.
It.
Yeah, thank you guys. I appreciate that.
So that was WCCO is Dave Lee, the voice of the Tommy football. Very, very interesting interview with Dave.
I always love talking to people in this industry. One, because, I mean, that's the industry we want to go into, right. and, you know, they've got good insight. But also, they know how to talk, and they talk well. And not saying that our other interviews have been bad. It's just they take a while to get into a rhythm.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're more rigid, more formal before, you know, finally like 4 or 5 questions in, the guests relax. With Dave, it was just...
Yeah.
You know, he was telling you afterward, you know, he gets paid to talk.
Yeah.
And so it's yeah. natural form comes on, probably our longest interview of the season.
Yeah.
And it was fun. I love talking to Dave.
Yeah, you were right. He came out firing right away. Great interview. He's got an awesome voice.
He does.
An absolutely beautiful voice. And he said you don't really need a great voice to be in radio, but it doesn't hurt.
Yeah,
it
no,
definitely
it,
doesn't hurt.
You don't need it, but that's a huge bonus.
Yeah. So we talked a little bit, the first segment, I thought it was the last segment of the show, but we talked a little bit about St. Olaf. We gave our score predictions. So we'll look for that this weekend.
Just to recap, 77-7 for me, 84-0 for Brady, and Althea said somewhere between 70 and 80 points for the Tommies.
Yep.
Do you think St. Olaf will score, Althea?
Yes, I do. I think they'll get at least 7 points.
Okay, because they are a better team than they were last year. I mean,
yeah.
look, they're one of the top teams in the MIAC right now,
yep,
record-wise. And that really doesn't say much because you have such a polarized league. But I do think with this second year under this, I'm going to call it the St. Thomas regime, where you've got...
The Killian era.
Exactly, yeah. the five St. Thomas coaches who are down there. I think they're starting to turn this organization around, and I think St. Olaf can be a good team in the next couple of years. So I don't expect... 97-0.
Yeah.
Like, that was a ridiculous game. Probably the most ridiculous football game I have ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be a little bit better than that. Still a lot, but I think they'll score.
Yeah, I was hoping they score 100 last year. I thought that would have been sweet.
Yeah.
I mean, if you get to the point where it's 97-0, just, you know, kick another field goal, huh? Let's get to 100.
And that's had the backup tight end, or sorry, four-string tight end, lining up as a fullback, doing halfback dives, and was still getting, you know, 8 to 10 yards per carry. And it's like, goodness gracious, just if you're going to do this, why not just give the ball to Parks one more time? Just let him run off, make it, you know, an even 104.
Yeah. St. Olaf just played St. John's last weekend, so they have a tough back-to-back with St. John's and St. Thomas.
Ooh, yeah.
They lost, I think, 52-7, but
yeah,
we'll see what the Tommies can do against them this weekend.
Yeah. Well, that's all we got for you here on KTBR. Keep the ball rolling. For Brady Halbmeyer and Althea Larson, I'm Noah Brown, and we'll see you next week.